Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Yes, indeed. Today is the day. If you're just joining us, today is Thursday, May the 9th, 2019. I love our listeners. So you all have jumped on to our text line, which is 877-933-2484. And you have all kinds of good ideas about reaching out to kids in your neighborhood. Let me just read this. Let me read this from a listener. Hey, here's a resource for you in expanding your conversation about neighborhood Bible clubs for kids. Child Evangelism Fellowship has curriculum and training. That's right on point here. CEF's website would be the place to go to do that. And then this person gives a testimony about having taught this Child Evangelism Fellowship backyard Bible club for 5 years. And seeing awesome spiritual growth in the lives of her own children, in addition to the lives of the children they were serving. So she talks about in her communication here, the opportunity that was for her own high school age kids, right, to in turn articulate their faith and lead other children, then lead children to the Lord. So what a great discipleship opportunity. For you with your teenagers or with, your grandkids who are of teenage age and you're thinking, what am I going to do with them this summer? Here's a wonderful opportunity, right? Like get some curriculum, get some training from Child Evangelism Fellowship, do a backyard Bible club, get with your church and say, hey, what might it look like for us to equip and empower the people of our congregation to use their homes as embassies this summer and actually do VBS in our backyards or in our front yards? Or on our sidewalks, instead of expecting people to come here to the church, what if we took it out into the world? What if we walked it out into our neighborhoods by actually mobilizing VBS? It still accomplishes the same goal, which is that you get to lead kids to God and you get to provide their families a wonderful place for them to spend a week of their time with caring adults in a safe place. Which is, frankly, the way a lot of people in the culture use VBS at churches. Okay, so I'm going to make a quick transition here. First of all, I heard that at the top of the hour, that news related to Kendrick Castile. Kendrick is the one person from the shooting in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, that I want us to know and I want us to remember. Kendrick Castile. So put his family on your prayer list today. He is the 18-year-old who ran toward the shooter. He used his body to block the bullets that were being aimed in the direction of his friends and his classmates. He is a young man who has been raised in the Catholic Church. He has been very involved with the Knights of Columbus, and he gave his life. He gave his life in sacrifice for others. Greater love has no one than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends. And so if you're going to remember a name, let's remember the name of the young man who in the spirit of Jesus Christ laid down his life for others, that others might live. And so let's celebrate the life of Kendrick Castile. Let's celebrate his faith. Let's be praying for his family who have now made the ultimate sacrifice, which is the giving of a child in the service of the Lord. And so be mindful of that today. Mindfulness is top of mind right now. What are you thinking about? And why are you thinking the way you're thinking about what you're thinking? And how is that going to influence how you lead others today in conversations, in your home, in the organizations where you serve? Let's think for a minute about reality and whether or not other people see reality the same way we see it, or if they are thinking differently and therefore seeing things differently. And what does that mean? And do we see ourselves rightly? Okay, all of those conversations are the subject matter of the book, New Thinking, New Future by Samuel Chand. And he's going to be here next to talk with us about what we're thinking about, how we're thinking about it, and how we might think differently in order that we might live differently and lead differently with one another. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. All right, friends, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. Joining me now, Samuel Chand, among other things, the author of a brand new book entitled New Thinking, New Future. Let me tell you a little bit about Sam. In the 1970s, as a student at Beulah Heights College, he served as a janitor, a cook, a dishwasher, all to finance his education. And then he returned in 1989 as the president of that same institution. And so we want to talk with him today about leadership. That is certainly his gifting. But we also want to talk with him about faith and how we as people of faith are thinking about things, and how if we would change the way we're thinking about things, we could actually change not only our future, but the future of the world and the community around us. Sam Chand, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you, Carmen. I'm so grateful to be on your show.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us today. When we start thinking about what we're thinking about, why don't we start with how do we act, right? How do we evaluate our style of thinking, and then how do we evaluate whether or not that style of thinking is holding us back?
Wow, that's a really big question, especially in the context of your previous segment in which you were encouraging parents and teenagers, young adults, to reach out, sidewalk, backyard, front yard, and you used the two words that I think fewer and fewer people are using now, which is what if, what if, what if. Because what if takes you in a different space than the question of what is. What is just keeps us where we are. What is just describes reality as where we are. But your question of what if takes us into an imagination that we have to be in a space to be thinking about. So, Carmen, the challenge of life is that so often it gets on autopilot, and we just wake up the next morning and the next morning and the next morning, and things remain pretty much the same. However, we also know that we will be where we are going in the future because of where our thoughts lead us. So how a man thinks, so is he, the scriptures remind us. So I think it's in the midst of that, we have to keep saying to ourselves, what am I thinking? How am I thinking? Where is my thinking taking me in a positive direction? Where is my stinking thinking keeping me in the present place that I am? And that is why I wrote this book, because everyone that's listening to us right now, Carmen, wants a new future. But to obtain that new future, we all have to be open to new thinking.
Okay, so I love that you use the phrase stinking thinking. My husband uses that phrase all the time. He will instead of condemning, you know, like, right, where somebody is up to something that is no good, and he was like, okay, now let's just remember their thinking is stinking. And when we have stinking thinking, we then, you know, that thought leads to words and leads to deeds that are certainly not glorifying to God or edifying to people. And so I love the connection that you're making between the way we're thinking, like the operating system in our mind and the way we're thinking about things, and the future that is then in front of us. So what if we do this? What if you explain maybe the levels or types of let's use the word commitment, and why differentiating those levels and types of commitment is important when we move into a conversation about how we're thinking about things.
Well, I think once we realize that our lives have significance, that every interaction has meaning to it, that you and I are having this conversation right now, and there are millions of people listening to us right now simply because somebody made a connection somewhere and realize that it was significant. So once we go beyond living a frivolous life and start living a consequential life, so people that you're going to meet today, is that just going to be a one-off in passing, or is it going to be something that will make a difference in your life? I'm speaking to you today, Carmen, because there have been literally thousands of people in my life who have made connections with and for me, and those, hi, my name is Sam. Oh, my name is Carmen. And that first handshake can lead to other things. And I think people who are listening to us right now, if we could all start thinking about, okay, at the end of this day, I will meet some new people. I will be with people I've known for a long time. There'll be some fresh acquaintances, some older acquaintances. What does that mean? And what is my role in their life and their role in my life? I think living consequential lives elevate the conversation to not only today, but we are in each other's lives on purpose. And living that purposeful life is the way we think. It's not what we do. Because a lot of people get into what they do rather than who they are.
Okay. I think that we should think together more about these things. And so let's continue to do that. I'm going to continue my conversation with Sam Chan. We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask Sam about how we unlearn some of our previous thought patterns in order that we can change the way that we're thinking and therefore change the future. The book is New Thinking, New Future. The author is Samuel Chand. You can check it out at samchand.com. We'll be right back.
I got an old church choir singing.
If you're just joining us, I am talking with Samuel Chand about his new book, New Thinking, New Future. You can check out what Sam is doing at samchand, that's chand.com. Sam, let's talk about, I think, something that's really quite challenging, and that is unlearning our previous thought patterns.
Absolutely. I'm reminded of a quote by Alvin Toffler, a great philosopher, leadership philosopher. Alvin Toffler said this. He said, the illiterate of the future will not be those who can't read or write. The illiterate of the future will be those who can't learn, unlearn, and relearn. And in my life, I have found that unlearning is harder than learning. There are many things in life that I wish I could do better. But Carmen, I am just bumfuzzled how I cannot unlearn my old habits. Old habits, old ways of thinking, old ways of doing things. It is just unlearning the old software and reloading it. So of the three things that Alvin talks about, learning, unlearning, and relearning, unlearning is the hardest. Because learning can come automatically, osmosis, environment, people you're with, casual conversations. But unlearning has to be very intentional. And unlearning is based on thinking, which says the way I'm thinking, the way I'm doing, the way I am conducting my life and organizing my life is not the most productive or conducive to the goals and destiny on my life. So there's thinking that's preceded to unlearning, which says what I'm doing right now is not the most beneficial. Hence, I've got to unlearn. Number two, then we have to catch ourselves in the act of the old way of thinking, old way of acting, bring ourselves into check, and then ask ourselves the difficult question, so what do I need to relearn? So unlearning is probably the most difficult thing we're going to do in our relationships. We're going to do in our job environments, in our churches. I remember when Brenda and I, my wife and I, have been married for over 40 years now. And she was an adult and I was an adult when we got married. And she brought her learnings and I brought my learnings. And for us to be together as a godly couple, there was so much unlearning on my part and her part that needed to take place. When you go into a new church, a new conversation, a new organization, a new relationship, the question is not what I'm going to learn. The question is what will I have to unlearn to relearn so I can be better at where I am.
So, Sam, it feels like that is, first of all, that's a mature disciple thinking about their own personal growth. That is a mature disciple evaluating where they are and where God is calling them to be. That is evidence that you're not only able to evaluate where you are and identify where the better place to be would be, but also a willingness to submit not only to the Holy Spirit within you, but my guess is the counsel of those around you to help you see things about yourself that you would otherwise not be able to see. So let's talk about evaluating personal growth and getting to the place where we actually trust other people to help us in this area.
Well, the whole notion of change is if you want substantial change, it has to be motivated by someone and something outside of you. Sometimes it's circumstances, sometimes it's adverse situations, sometimes it's people who love us and are willing to speak truth into our life, and sometimes it's people that we don't like who will respond in certain ways. So the Holy Spirit nudges us in so many different ways to say to us, what you're doing, the way you're thinking, the way you're organizing your life, your behavior patterns are not conducive to the destiny that you have on your life. And I think being aware that people who speak into our life are not against us, people who speak into our life are really for us. But more than that, I think we have to give people permission in our lives to speak into our lives. There have to be people in life that we say, hey, listen, watch me. Anything comes up, talk to me. Your role in my life is to make me better. If you don't speak to me, you'll leave me where I am. And that's not what good friends do. That's not what good relationships do. And giving people permission to do that, and then having the humility to receive that. Now, everything that is said to you is not necessarily gospel truth, but we have to be in a position to at least evaluate it as objectively as possible. This is what I found in life, Carmen. There's no such thing as constructive criticism. It is constructive only to the person giving it. But the person receiving it, I think because of the way we are wired as human beings, our first response usually is, really? And it is a little pushback in our head. We may be smiling on the outside and thanking somebody for it verbally, but on the inside, there's pushback going on. And I think once that initial pushback has been acknowledged, then we can actually assimilate what's been said and to make note of it if there's a pattern of behavior in our life. But I think you're absolutely right. It has to be people that we have given permission to who can speak into our life so that we can have a new future because we have new thinking.
So my mom used to say, there's no such thing as constructive criticism because all criticism is destructive, but sometimes that destruction is necessary. Like it's creative destruction in order that you
Absolutely.
Might be recreated. And so
there's
something that needs to be broken down in me in order that I can become better. And so that's the process of refinement. And sometimes it comes by fire and that's hard. I really appreciate that what you're talking about in this portion of the conversation is mutual submission and how we as mm-hmm. Christians mutually submit to one another, in the spirit of Christ, because we each and every one want to be more and more refined, more and more brought into the likeness of who Christ is. And this is the process of how that happens. I wish we could just talk for hours about this, but let's just send people to get the book. So the book is New Thinking, New Future. The author is Samuel Chan. You can check out other things that he is writing and working on and have him speak if you go to Sam Chand, that's chand.com. Thank you so much for joining us today on Mornings with Carmen. Thank you for thinking about what you're thinking about. Thank you for the way you're pouring your life into the next generation of leaders, and I just so appreciate what you do and how you do it.
Thank you, Carmen, and appreciate how you do what you do. Your thinking elevates our thinking.
Thank you so much. Let's keep having those what-if conversations with one another. That's Sam Chan. Check him out at samchan.com. I got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with David Schmoos from the Christian Educators Association International about National Teacher Appreciation Week. And so we're going to end by saying thank you to Sam Chan as a teacher. Okay, so it is National Teacher Appreciation Week. Have you appreciated teachers this week, the teachers in your own life, and the teachers in the community in which you live? So we are going to talk next with David Schmuth from the Christian Educators Association International. We're going to talk about Christians who are serving as educators in public schools, the challenges they face, and the impact they're making, and how we, as members of the community, can support them. So how are you celebrating people whom God has called to be educators and teachers in public schools today? And how can we show them our appreciation during this National Teacher Appreciation Week? That's up next here on Mornings with Garvin. So today, as you consider the things that are going on in the world, I would encourage you to spend some time in intentional Bible study and prayer, cultivating the life of the Spirit within you. If you need some help doing that and some resources, we have lots of them available at the website, myfaithradio.com. So maybe today you are facing a particular challenge of loneliness, or maybe today you are facing the reality of fear. Maybe today you are you're considering a decision that is in front of you, and you're like, where am I going to get some reliable counsel in terms of how I go about living in these days? That's actually what we post every single day at myfaithradio.com. And so if you need a Bible, you can get one. If you need reliable teaching, you can get it. If you want to download a Bible study, you can do it. If you want to lift up a prayer concern, we offer that as well. So go to myfaithradio.com and join us in the conversation that we're having every single day, which brings faith to life.
Remember the old Star Trek shows? Back then, the gadgets they used seemed so futuristic and far-fetched. But today, we're using technology that would even blow Scotty's mind. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Facebook, Messenger, Skype, Google, Hangouts, FaceTime. Teenagers have more ways to communicate than ever before, but they're finding it increasingly difficult to connect in their relationships. That's because all this new communication stuff gets in the way, and kids aren't developing the old-fashioned tools we learned for having real conversations. We've all seen it happen. A group of teens sitting in the same room, texting each other, rather than talking. Has technology become your teen's only mode of communication? Help them put down the mobile device and practice some good old real-life social interaction.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Check out his latest resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
This is Teacher Appreciation Week. I know that here in my community, there are big signs out on the road in front of the elementary school declaring, you know, we are thankful for our teachers. We have been sending little encouragements to the teachers in our kids' classrooms, and I'm hoping that you have thought about ways that you could reach out and say thank you and appreciation to teachers in your life. Maybe that is the person who has discipled you in Christ. Maybe that is your fifth grade teacher. So this would be a shout out to Miss Joyce Mabry, except Miss Joyce Mabry is now with the Lord. And so I'll just give her a shout out from here to heaven and trust that Jesus will pass that along in the spirit in which it is sent. Joining me now is David Schmuth. He is with the Christian Educators Association International. You can find them at ceai.org, here to talk with us about Christians serving as educators in public schools. David, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you so much for having me, Carmen. So glad to be here.
Okay, so you have to give a shout out to I Did My Fifth Grade Teacher. Who are you going to pick?
Well, you know, it's funny. My fifth grade teacher also was hugely significant in my life. His name was Mr. Bilodeau. And he called me out one day. You know, I didn't think I was a very good student. And he called me out one day and said, you know, that David, this is probably politically correct. Probably it was something you wouldn't say in class today. But he said, David, you know, he's one of the smart kids. And I kind of looked around. You look behind me like me, really? And that kind of changed my identity that day. And I began to become a more high-achieving student. And I look back at Mr. Bilodeau and think, wow, my whole identity shifted because of one moment in his class.
So I feel that way about Miss Chestnut in third grade. I don't even consciously remember the specific interaction, like you remember your interaction with Mr. Bilodeau. But there was something about the way Ms. Chestnut treated me that absolutely changed my perception of myself as a student and what we were doing in school. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't,
you know,
like
Jim,
jail.
Jim
like,
Henson,
it's suddenly become not like jail anymore.
Yeah, right. Jim Henson has a famous quote, and he says, you know, they won't remember so much of what you teach them, but they'll remember who you are. And it sounds like that's the effect that Mrs. Chestnut had on you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about Christians that are serving as educators in public schools. There are a lot of them. I think sometimes in our culture, we hear people encouraged as Christians to, you know, sort of leave public education because it is a difficult place for Christians to serve. But let's talk about the value of Christians serving as educators in public schools today.
Yeah, you know, George Barna cites that about half of all public school teachers attend church once a month. And I know that might come shocking to a lot of people who hear a lot of bad things about what's happening in the public schools. But, you know, this is a mission field. This is where 85 to 90% of our youth are spending a lot of their time, maybe most of their time. And so if we leave the public schools, and you know, we're not so much talking about where you send your kids. That's a decision people need to make in prayer and in wisdom and in counsel. But in terms of where the church engages and where we as adults engage, the public schools is, I think, the most strategic mission field in our nation right now. You know, where else are we going to reach all these kids who are not going to come to our churches for the most part and are being really carried away by false worldviews? And we need to really reach out to them.
So why don't you just speak directly to them? Because there are lots of folks right now headed to school. They're listening on their radio, and they're wondering whether or not what they're doing in that classroom today or what they're doing in that public school is really making an impact. Talk about the eternal impact that that those working in public education are making today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, these kids are so broken and so hurting. I was a public school teacher for 15 years, and I got to see every day these kids come into my class so needing father, so needing encouragement, so needing someone to speak words of life into their class. You know, and I got to basically teach the biblical worldview. I couldn't call it that, of course. I couldn't cite chapter and verse, but simply using the Socratic method, asking questions, putting up good quotes for discussion. I got to really model for them what it looks like to think biblically, to think critically, to ask questions that aren't being asked today. And so our hands are tied to some extent by the law. Obviously, Christian teachers can't get up in their classrooms and give an altar call. But what they can do is they can bring Christ with them onto their campuses. They can walk out the faith in the Holy Spirit. For example, I was driving to school one day and I asked the Lord, what do you want me to do today? What's on your agenda? And I felt like in that still small voice, he whispered into my spirit, I want you to pray for your principal. And that was very scary for me because my principal was someone who carried her authority very strongly and did not seem to have much of a faith background. And so I walked in to her office and said, well, this is a little bit awkward, but I feel like I'm supposed to pray for you. And I was terrified, honestly. But she sat there staring at me for what seemed like eternity. It was probably about 10 seconds, but it seemed like 10 minutes at least. And I was, you know, mentally freshening up my resume and thinking this isn't going real well. But she began to pour out her heart and share something that was so difficult and something that she couldn't share and something that was causing her to a little bit lose respect in the eyes of the campus community because she had to deal with this in her personal life. And she couldn't tell anyone. And she got to unload and she got to get some prayer and meet the Lord's love for her in that way. And, you know, we can do that in a sense every day on our campuses as Christian educators. You know, yes, there are legal questions. We could talk about that. You know, we could talk about what those limitations are, or how to go around them. But these teachers are really caught in the middle. These Christian educators in public schools are caught in the middle of our culture war. They're caught in the middle of sometimes having to teach, you know, for example, sex ed curriculums or history or literature curriculums that go against their values or science curriculums. And yet they find themselves caught in this place where, well, I'm a person of faith, you know, much like Daniel in the Bible, right? Daniel was carried away out into a secular pagan culture, and yet he was put in a position of authority. And he had to walk that out with wisdom and faith. And that's kind of the place our teachers find themselves in.
Well, and you guys have something called the Daniel Project. Let's talk about that next. But as we go to break, let me just remind people of the website, CEIA. That stands for Christian Educators Association International. CEAI. Sorry, I might have done that backwards the first time. A little dyslexic today. CEAI, Christian Educators Association International.org. Great place to get some resources for yourself as a teacher. And if you're not a teacher, to become equipped in how to support Christians who are serving as educators in our public schools. My conversation with David Schmoos continues in just a moment.
I'm smelling coffee, birds are singing just outside. Here comes your mercy streaming in.
So who are the teachers who come to mind when you consider who taught you how to read and who taught you how to understand the world and who helped you have the perspective you have upon it? It is Teacher Appreciation Week, and let us be showing appreciation to those who have taught us, and let's be showing our appreciation to those who are teaching right now, the next generation. So joining me is David Schmoos from the Christian Educators Association International. David, let's talk about the Daniel Project.
Sure. Yeah, the Daniel Project, you know, I like to describe Christian educators as having a protection wing and a ministry wing. And the Daniel Project is a big part of our ministry wing. And this is where we're getting teachers away for a weekend conference to really equip them to how to see their schools in a missional context, but do that legally. So we train them in the law, the legal do's and don'ts. We give them some skills and some awarenesses. We also want to hear from them about what they're facing and the challenges that they're looking at, and help them develop actual plans of action that they can take back to their campus and say, hey, I'm going to start a faculty prayer group, or I'm going to encourage some of my students to start a Bible club on campus, or whatever that looks like. You know, the Holy Spirit leads us differently and gifts us differently. So campus ministry, especially from the perspective of teachers, always looks a little bit different. But to give them those skills and the awarenesses and the plan of action that for them to walk back to their campus. And then for those that are really, really interested in walking out that call in a much more serious way, we have an extended summer training. That's also part of that Daniel Project. And we're seeing tremendous results. I don't know if you ever heard about Rebecca Friedrichs, who took a case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court dealing with the rights of teachers to not have to belong to unions and the leftist politics they support. Or Mike Hicks, who's taking our Lift America outreach all over the nation, which is another thing we could talk about. But these are people who went through the Daniel program and were equipped to really be leaders in their fields, in their schools, and in what God is doing on their campuses. So we're very excited what God's doing with the Daniel program.
Well, and if people will go to the website, CEAI.org, they're gonna see right there on the top of the feed links to each one of those things that David just mentioned. So if you want to hear about Lyft, it's right there. If you want to hear about the reality that teachers don't have to join unions anymore, it's right there as well, and the stories related to those things. Wonderful opportunities. Let's talk briefly, David, about the challenges that Christians serving as educators in public schools do face today, because I know that is one of your areas of real expertise, and also service, because you guys come alongside teachers who are challenged in those ways.
Yes, this is one of the most exciting things I think we get to do, is when there's a Christian teacher in a public school who's in a crisis, and we deal with them every day, and they call us, and they need godly counsel, they need prayer, they need support. And, you know, they're typically not going to get that from their unions, you know. For example, we had a teacher who had a relationship with a student who was suicidal. And he found out that she had actually left the school. And so he reached out to her in an email, and he told her that he would be praying for her. Well, he accidentally misaddressed the email to one of his colleagues rather than the student, and it was turned into the principal. This teacher ended up actually being escorted off campus by security as he started his suspension while they investigated and decided what they were going to do. You know, and so that's a situation where, you know, frankly, most teachers' unions are not going to do much. they're going to say, hey, why are you praying for a kid? You know, separation of church and state, right? And so they come to us and they get counsel. They get a local attorney if that's necessary. They get support from a godly perspective, and they get prayer. And that's something that I don't think any union will ever provide. And so we do strongly believe in the goal of teachers getting out of these unions. You know, in the 2016 election cycle, the AFT and NEA, the two largest national teachers unions, gave nearly $3 million to Planned Parenthood. You know, and those are teachers unions dues. And they can read about that on our website under CEA, if they go to our website and they go click on the About Unions page, they can read about that and find out, you know, where's my money going if I'm paying union dues? And they don't have to do that anymore. With a Janus Supreme Court case in June, they're now free to leave their unions completely, and they can join Christian educators for typically half to one-fourth of the cost of a union, get much better protections and legal coverages in place, and most importantly, from a biblical worldview. And so we would love to talk to teachers out there who need that kind of support.
So, David, let's give some ideas to people today. What are some ways that we can tangibly show appreciation for Christians, well, and really for everybody who is serving as teachers this week and every week? What are some ways of showing them appreciation?
Well, you know, all of us, of course, like, you know, people who deliver treats and notes and coffee, and those are all wonderful things to do. You know, letting these teachers know that you are actively praying for them. And, you know, not only, of course, the Christian teachers, but also your non-Christian teachers. You know, what a great way to witness to non-Christian teachers and say, look, I just want you to know I'm praying for you. And is there any specific way I could pray for you? And not as an agenda, not as a way to, you know, to try to win an argument, but to win a friend. You know, we teach our educators to try to be bridge builders, not bomb throwers, because when you go on a public school campus, if you're there to win an argument rather than win a friend, you're probably not going to be that successful. But if parents and community members can go on a public school campus and say, I'm going to reach out to the principal, I'm going to reach out to these teachers and aides and coaches and whoever God leads them to in a positive way with love, I think that is very, very effective. Also, consider maybe starting a Moms in Prayer group for your campus if they don't already have one. That is a great way to serve your school and bring godly influence there. Also, I would say if you're a parent of a child in a public school, don't assume that your teacher can meet all your child's needs. You know, they have human limitations. We go through anxiety and worry and stress and just like anyone else. You know, some people say, yeah, teachers only work 9 or 10 months a year, but they put full-time hours, full years of hours in those 9 or 10 months. And being a teacher is a very stressful job. They're caught in the middle on so many levels. They're caught in the middle, you know, on worldview issues and cultural issues, but also interpersonal issues, you know, between the school and the parents and the child. And, you know, we have teachers who are dealing with kids with transgender issues, for example, with gender confusion. And in some cases, they're not allowed to inform the parents that their child is asking to be identified as an opposite gender. I mean, can you imagine a teacher in that position where this child is going through this terrible time of gender confusion that could affect the whole entire rest of their life, and they might not be allowed to tell their parent? Wow. I mean, what a crazy world that we are living in. So, and then I would also say, introduce them to CEAI. You know, for whatever reason, the reason that I'm trying to change, we're a little bit of a best kept secret out there in the world of public school educators and Christian public school educators. So if you have a Christian public school teacher, make sure they know about us, because I think that you won't regret it and they won't regret it.
Amen. All right, you guys, you need to go to CEAI.org. Shower our teachers this week with some love, and not just this week, but every week. David Schmoos, thank you so much for being with us today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have a couple more ideas for you. In your church, you can show appreciation for those who are serving as teachers, and actually in any way in the educational system at any level, anybody that's, you know, got some kind of kid-related job, youth-related job, college-related job, commission them in your churches as missionaries. Actually have a commissioning service. Do it every single year before the start of the school year, or do it now as an act of thanksgiving during Teacher Appreciation Week. Great way of showing appreciation for those in our midst who are serving Christ out there in the education arena. You can also volunteer to serve as a classroom mom or dad or helper or reader in a classroom and in other school-related events and groups for which those teachers are responsible. Be another adult who just voluntarily comes alongside and serves in that way, again, as an ambassador of the kingdom of heaven in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. You can change the world by changing the life of a child, and one of the easiest places to do that is in our schools. Have a great day, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.